Hello and welcome to episode number 14 of the Bunt of the Gap podcast. My name is Adam. I'm joined by Dave in the Bunt Cave. How's it going?
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
And we've got Sweet Nick in the control room. How's it going, Nick?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Later on in the episode, we'll be talking to Tim Lala of the Chicago area. He is riding in support of biking for baseball, and this summer he will be biking to 30 MLB baseball stadiums. So,
and by biking, we mean cycling.
Right. What else would one mean by biking?
Motorcycle.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, he's cycling. He's pedaling.
Yeah.
He's pedaling to 30 baseball stadiums.
Which is a bit more impressive.
For charity.
Yeah, for charity. Episode number 14, dedicated this week in particular to former Blue Jay, David Price.
Yeah, do you know any other 14s that have played for the Blue Jays? I can't think of any.
John Buck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was going to say Eric Thames.
Eric Thames. Moises Sierra.
Oh, how about Robinson Diaz?
Nolan Reimold.
Yeah, Ruben Sierra.
And Justin Smoak.
Oh, that's the one. I forgot about Justin Smoak.
I mean, Ricky Henderson.
You didn't mention Ricky Henderson.
Derek Bell.
Yep. Anything to talk about for Justin Smoak? Anything you want to say that hasn't already been said?
He's still on the team.
Still on the team. However, he's got Rowdy Tellez breathing down his neck. Rowdy, unfortunately, today at spring training, didn't fare so well. He was 0 for 3 with 2 strikeouts and impressed a few days ago, but today not so much.
Yeah.
A few other guys getting some at-bats today in spring training. Troy Tulowitzki. He also had a strikeout, but it was his first 2 at-bats of the spring training schedule. And Steve Pierce, who had a hit and drove in 2 runs for the Blue Jays. Marcus Stroman pitched pretty well, and Marco Estrada took the mound for the first time.
Yeah. How do they all look to you, Dave?
You know, Batista looks good. Tulowitzki looks fine. And Pierce came through in the clutch. So, obviously, he looked better than some other guys. Stroman looked pretty dialed in. And Estrada looked like his usual self, believe it or not. I wouldn't have guessed that it was his first start in spring training.
Yeah. I guess that bodes well for the Jays then.
I mean, I'd hope so.
If he can keep his health up for now.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a few other guys who didn't fare so well. Aaron Loop didn't have a great outing. Bo Schultz didn't have a great outing either, and neither did Joe Smith. So some of those bullpen guys that are fighting for a spot, and one would figure Joe Smith has a spot, but Schultz and Loop especially need to have sharp springs.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they both out of options this season? Schultz is for sure, right?
Schultz is for sure. Aaron Loop can be optioned. However, according to this table on bluebirdbanter.com, it seems like if he is optioned, he can elect free agency. So there you go. So maybe Aaron Loop still has some wiggle room, but if he has a poor showing with the Jays, it's possible that they could option him and he can elect free agency.
Hmm. So the Score had a report earlier today recording on Sunday, that the Blue Jays have interest in Angel Pagan. How do you guys feel about that?
I don't hate it, actually. He's got relatively good numbers. Still played in 129 games last season at the age of 34.
Yeah, he had positive base running runs above average, according to FanGraphs, 1.9 runs above average. He was 4.9 offensive runs above average, according to FanGraphs, slightly negative on defense. He spent most of his defensive time in left field. He played most of his time in center field in 2015 for the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not terrible.
I mean, the stolen bases are down, but they're not horrendous. He still had 15 last year, 12 and 16 in the last 2 years before that.
Yeah, in most of these stats, actually, he's better than Melvin Upton Jr. in terms of offensive runs above average. And slightly better than that compared to Carrera, too. Both of them put up less wins above replacement than Angel Pagan did last year. He had 2.1, Melvin had 1.2, and Carrera 0.7.
Although this does go against Ross Atkins' decree that the Jays are going to get younger. Signing a 34-year-old doesn't bode well for that.
Well, yeah, Dave, you have anything to add?
Angel Pagan, I have no feelings towards this. It doesn't make sense to me, and I think I don't believe that there's any real weight to these rumors. I don't think that the Jays are looking for another outfielder to add to their mix. It doesn't make sense. They've got Steve Pierce. They've got Melvin Upton. They've got Ezekiel Carrera. They potentially have Dalton Pompey if he plays well enough. So why would you pay for Angel Pagan?
Do you think that adding Pagan would allow the Jays to allocate Pierce to mostly, or if not entirely, first base then?
Yes, but the thing is you need to find somewhere for Pierce to play. So it's either first base or it's left field. And from my understanding, the two closest position players that the Blue Jays have that are young to the majors are Rowdy Tellez and Dalton Pompey. And so because Steve Pierce could potentially play either one of those positions, they are potentially blocking one of those guys by forcing Steve Pierce into just one role.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't put any weight to it. I think they could have been looking at him when Steve Pierce's status for the beginning of the year was unknown. So it was possible that they were just looking for some reinforcement there. You know, it's also just possible that they were doing their due diligence. For all we know, they're maybe just bargain hunting at this point, and for $1 million, maybe it makes sense.
Yeah. Well, to add to that, the FanGraphs crowdsource valuation is 2 years at $9 million per year.
Yeah.
Which seems a bit high for me, personally.
Well, I think at this point in the year, he would take a lot less.
Yeah.
And so
Dave Cameron had him, too, at 7 per year, which still may be a bit high, but
yeah,
we'll see.
I mean, the other side of the coin is what type of market is out there for Ezekiel Carrera and Melvin Upton Jr. And if they feel like they can move one of those guys for a decent return, then maybe it makes sense to move on Angel Pagan or something like that. If they feel like they can restock the farm, get some prospects for Melvin Upton Jr. at $1 million.
Yeah.
Or eat half of his salary and give another team Melvin Upton Jr. for $500,000 and get some prospects back, maybe Angel Pagan makes sense.
Yeah. From a batting perspective, just in terms of weighted runs created plus, where again, 100 is average, he's projected by Steamer to have a WRC plus of 91. Zips has him at 87, which is not ideal. But Steamer and Zips have Melvin Upton Jr. at 82 and 72 respectively, and Carrera at 81 and 79 respectively. So, I mean, even though he's going to be a below average hitter in terms of WRC plus, he may be still an upgrade over those two guys.
Yeah. Well, and if he doesn't sign with the Blue Jays, who would be your best guess who he signs with?
Might have to go back to the Giants.
Yeah. Like, I think either the Giants, depending on how their left field situation plays out, can't name names, but I believe they have two young players fighting it out for left field right now, both of whom have tremendous potential. I would also guess, oh, well, that makes sense. For some reason, my mind was saying, whoa, he might sign with the Angels. And I think I just made that association because of his first name. So, but mind you, it would be something sneaky that the Angels would do because that's the type of signing that they've made all year. Those types of low-risk veteran players. And I think it'd be funny to see him play for the Angels.
Yeah. Well, the Giants have Denard Span in center field. He may be injured like he is wont to do. They've got Hunter Pence in right field. I think the players you're thinking of are Mac Williamson and Jarrett Parker.
Yes.
Do those ring a bell?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't know a lot about the Giants. I'm just going to shut up now.
Yeah, neither do I. Okay. Well, cool.
Let's take a break and come back and talk to Tim Lala of Biking for Baseball. Be right back on Bunt of the Gap.
Welcome back to the Bunt of the Gap podcast. We're on with Tim Lala, who is biking for baseball this summer. Tim, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I can't complain. How about you guys?
We're not too bad. Had a long commute today, but looking forward to doing this interview with you. So my understanding is that you are a Chicago White Sox fan. Are you from Chicago, or are you just grown up liking the White Sox?
Yeah, so I grew up on like the southwest suburbs. It's a place called Orland Park. It's like half hour southwest of the city. So grew up a lifelong White Sox fan. Not quite sure how, to be honest. Parents are both diehard Cubs fans. Brother's a diehard Cubs fan. Everyone in their mothers is a diehard Cubs fan. So I'm not sure what happened to me, but yeah, I've been I've been with the Pale Hose since I can remember.
No, it makes sense because it sounds like you were trying to rebel. You didn't want to just fall in line with the rest of the Cubs fans.
To be honest, I think it had something to do with the crush I had on a girl in like third grade. I think she was a Sox fan, and I was trying to impress her. But whatever the reason was, yeah, I became a White Sox fan.
How's the dynamic shifted in the household over the past 10 years or so?
See, you'd be surprised because, you know, back in 05 when we had our year, obviously I was the only one that was truly into the games. Obviously, my parents kind of, they'll swing both ways. They'll root for the Sox if they're in the playoffs. But these last 2 years have been pretty rough because my parents are kind of expecting me to jump on the same bandwagon. You know, they want me to root for the Cubs when they're doing well. And it's tough. It's hard.
It's not reciprocal, is it?
No, it's definitely not.
So what was your reaction then to the Cubs winning the World Series?
Well, I was actually overseas, thank God. So I was in Nepal with pretty limited cell service, but I actually had enough service to text my mom. I was texting my mom back and forth during Game 7, and she was giving me play-by-play updates. And when I say play-by-play, I'm talking every single pitch she was giving me an update. And she just, you know, was telling me about, you know, okay, pitching change, so-and-so is being brought in. This is crazy. Okay, ball one, 2-1 count. You know, just like stuff like that.
Have you actually watched Game 7?
Oh, yeah. I went back and watched it. But I'm not going to lie. Even I actually screenshotted it, the text, because it was chilling. You know, I think there was a couple men on base during the last play. And she said, ground ball. Oh, my God. The Cubs have won the World Series. And that's how I found out the Cubs won it all. And I'm not going to lie. Even I kind of got chills. Like, I was just imagining the party back in Wrigleyville, so.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll give you one time here to take your shot at Sweet Nick. Sweet Nick actually went to bed early during that game.
Oh, are you kidding?
Yeah, I had an early morning the next day, and I went to extras, and I said, I'll figure out the score in the morning.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's brutal. Oh, man.
Yeah, he's the producer on our baseball podcast and decided, you know what, now's a good time to go to bed.
Even after that game tying home run, you didn't realize that this game was going to be something special. Like,
I thought the Indians were going to win it, and I was still a little bitter about the ALCS. So I thought, why bother?
Honestly, I completely agree. I thought after they hit that home run, I thought that game was in the bag for the Indians. You know, all the momentum, but it's beauty of baseball.
Yep.
So Tim, you mentioned your parents within the past 2 years started to become really pay attention to the Cubs, and I'm wondering if you noticed that from friends and family that are people you didn't even know were baseball fans over the past 2 years.
Yeah, I get exactly what you're asking with that question.
I asked it diplomatically, but I know it.
Oh yeah, we all noticed it, but because you know Wrigley Field is always, I hate to say it, but it's always the funner ballpark of the two. So, you know, you go to the Wrigley Field to have a good time. And so, you know, people that have been going to Wrigley for the past 10 years didn't really care about the baseball, you know, except for these last 2 years. But with that being said, you know, I have a bunch of friends that have been diehard Cubs fans since day one, and they've stuck through them with the, you know, when they're the bottom feeders, the NL, and you know, during the Ron Santo years. So there's definitely some diehards in there, but yeah, don't be mistaken. There's been surprisingly a lot more Cubs fans these last 2 years. Who would have thought?
Well, so it's funny that you mentioned that Wrigley's the more fun stadium. So previously named U.S. Cellular Field is now called Guaranteed Rate Stadium, and the logo is a downward pointing arrow. I'm just wondering how you feel about the name, if you feel it's symbolic for how the Cubs, or sorry, how the White Sox are doing right now, and what your thoughts are on the teams.
You're just gonna beat me when I'm down, huh?
I'm just asking.
Guaranteed.
Yeah, that was definitely a very black eye on an already brutal season. I remember. I actually don't think I saw the news. I think someone texted me with the name change, and I didn't even have the. I couldn't even bother looking it up. I was like, that is just absolutely unbelievable. But in the end of the day, I remember back in, I think it was like 02 or 03 when they renamed it to U.S. Cellular and everyone was up in arms. You know, you eventually get over it and everyone still refers to it as either Sox Park or Comiskey anyway. So it's kind of like, well, aside from having to look at a downwards arrow every time I pull up to the stadium. It's not that big of a deal.
So then, knowing that the White Sox are in this rebuilding phase, I suppose, is there any particular young player that you're excited to watch this year, or any current player that really excites you, knowing that, you know, Chris Sale and Adam Eaton are gone?
Not offhand, to be honest. Honestly, I need to start watching more spring training games because I haven't really been following how some of the younger guys have been doing. Honestly, the pitching staff has me pretty excited because, you know, we still got Quintana and we still got, you know, we're still maintaining the bulk of our bullpen. So honestly, I can see this being one of those years where, you know, they kind of maybe even break 500, even with having such a young club. So nearly not one player that's exciting me. My favorite player for a while has actually been obviously Al Garcia, so that's kind of random. But yeah, from a young player standpoint, can't say I really have one that's catching my eye. We'll see as the season goes, though.
So did you have a favorite player growing up? Was it Paul Konerko?
Well, yeah. Paul Konerko is always a fan favorite. Like, I mean, just for what he did in Game 2 of that World Series when he hit that Grand Slam. I mean, like, you know, I consider it my favorite moment in sports history. But favorite player wise, you got to give it to Burley.
Yes, nice.
I know. Nice. I know you guys are Blue Jays fans. This is something we'll probably no one will in either city is going to argue. I mean, the guy's just a workhorse. Like, no, I can't think of another pitcher that you can count on to consistently go out there, give you a quality start, seven solid innings day after day after day. I mean, I'm so glad they're retiring his number this year because, I mean, no one deserves more than that guy.
Yeah, for sure.
The underrated thing about Burley is that he would pitch a 7-inning game in like an hour and a half and you'd be home in time for dinner. It was ridiculous. And I so appreciate it given how long baseball games are nowadays.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because, you know, all these new rules, well, not all these new rules, but, you know, the whole intentional walk rule change this season, how they're trying to speed up the games. And my thought is just make a Burley rule where you just make Burley go out and throw every single game. You'll cut an hour off every game.
Yeah.
So talking about Beyond Guaranteed Rate Stadium in Wrigley Field, as part of Biking for Baseball, you are biking to all 30 MLB ballparks for charity. So do you want to talk about the initiative and then tell us if there's any park in particular you're looking forward to seeing a game at?
Yeah, so I'll start with kind of Biking for Baseball and, you know, what exactly it is for those who don't know. Biking for Baseball basically aims to help boost awareness and encourage people to go out and become mentors to kids. So we usually partner up with places like Big Brothers Big Sisters and Boys and Girls Club to put on youth clinics in, you know, all the different stadiums. So it started out in 2012. There was four guys that rode to every single ballpark on their bikes, and they partnered with Big Brothers Big Sisters, and they put on kids clinics at every single stadium. So what the kids clinics kind of entail is, you know, bigs and their littles will come out, usually around 20 to 30 pairs, just to come out for a day of baseball. You know, they'll do some drills to start out, and then they'll move to some practice games. And at the end of it, you know, a lot of the times they'll go catch a game at the local park, or, you know, maybe go out to dinner or something like that. So it's usually, you know, really fun, and it's an awesome way to show people, you know, just how much fun it can be to be a mentor for both, you know, the mentor and the kids, obviously.
That's great, man. So what inspired you to get involved and to undertake such a huge task?
Yeah, so my story actually is a little different. So my kind of motivation for riding from a personal standpoint, you know, I grew up with a pretty fortunate childhood. You know, I had great supportive parents, you know, gave me a lot, taught me, you know, great values, taught me how to treat others and whatnot. So I'm very fortunate, and I consider them, you know, my two best mentors. And my dad was actually diagnosed with Parkinson's about 9 years now, actually a little over 9 years, almost to this month, I think. And pretty mild form. It's not nearly as severe as others, but stuff like that, you know, really takes a toll on, you know, your family, on him personally. And, you know, it's tough to see, you know, the guy who raised you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Sorry to hear that, man.
No, it's okay. And like I said, it's a pretty mild form. But, you know, like I said, despite that, despite the disease, despite the hardship, you know, he never let that affect my upbringing. And, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago, I knew I wanted to do something to kind of pay that back, to kind of honor what he had given me. And so I started thinking of, you know, things I enjoy, biking and planning this cross-country trip. And just a quick Google search, I found biking for baseball. And, you know, I thought this would just be a perfect partnership. And so far it has.
That's awesome. How did you plan your route? Or have you planned it?
Yeah, it's fully planned. You can see kind of the picture of what the route looks like on the Biking for Baseball website. And then the day-to-day route, it will be posted probably in the next couple of weeks here. It's finalized. Planning the route was tough because obviously you're looking at two things. You're looking at A, obviously you don't want to bike any more than you have to. You're already biking 11,000 miles.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to kind of try to minimize it. You don't want to be jumping from Seattle over to Miami and then back to Los Angeles or something, you know, outrageous like that. But then you also have to plan, when are the teams going to be at home? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you want to try to catch, you want to catch a game at every stadium. And so the areas I found that were really difficult with that are the cities with, two ball clubs. So,
yeah.
For instance, like Oakland and San Francisco, you know, they're always, the schedule always works out where one's home and the other's away. So you always need to make sure to arrive in those cities at the very end of the first team's homestand. That way you can stick around and wait for the next team to come back without, you know, eating up 3 or 4 days of biking.
For sure.
So it took me, you know, a solid 2 or 3 weeks to kind of, you know, make sure that I had the shortest route possible and still making sure I was, you know, in town for a game at each one of those stadiums.
So I'm curious if you've estimated or figured out what your daily caloric intake will need to be so that you don't disintegrate into a pile of bones like doing all that biking, Tim. I'm worried about you.
See, I'm a big Taco Bell guy, so I actually just estimate in terms of cheesy gordita crunches, and I think we're looking at like 20 to 25 a day. So
wow.
Whatever that math comes out to.
Have you talked to Taco Bell about sponsorship?
Oh man, I wish.
I'm sure there's probably, like, they're good on social media. You should send them a tweet or something like that.
So, you know, we were like, when we were thinking of sponsorships, we were reaching out to like all these club, you know, all these companies associated with baseball or associated, you know, with me somehow. We didn't even think about reaching out to the best company there is, Taco Bell.
Tim Lala, fueled by Taco Bell, put it on a jersey. So have you spoken to Matt Stoltz, who did the ride in 2015? So has he given you any tips or tricks or what to look out for along the route?
Oh, yeah. I'm actually become pretty good friends with Matt through this organization, Biking for Baseball. That's how I met him. But we actually we went and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro over in Africa about 2 months ago. So I had a ton of one-on-one time to pick his brain about, you know, what worked with his ride, what didn't. You know, what things to bring, what things not to bring, stuff like that. So, needless to say, I've gotten a pretty good idea of, you know, what he recommends based off his ride.
And so, is that something typical for people doing the ride? Like, is that the spring training for Biking for Baseball? You have to climb Mount Kilimanjaro,
or is that like the passing of the torch? Like the previous rider has to take the next rider up the mountain.
It wasn't attrition before this, but honestly, it's not a bad idea. Like, that, you know, usually, you know, at the beginning of the season, spring training, everyone's in, you know, terrible shape. They haven't been doing anything during the off season, you know. And that's kind of how I felt with biking. You know, like when you first ride in March, you just feel awful and you struggle to bike 20 miles and you're just going so slow. But climbing Kilimanjaro with Matt, you know, it gives you a good base. You know, I lost all my hibernation weight, so to speak, and these first couple rides in the winter, they weren't nearly as bad because of that mountain. So, you know what? That might be a tradition we need to start.
Are you worried about your calves getting as big as Matt's did?
Honestly, I'm not worried. That would be awesome. I would show those off everywhere.
That's a bonus to doing this.
Exactly.
All right, so which cities are you most looking forward to from a baseball and a biking perspective? And on the other side of that, which ones are you dreading, or which parts of the ride are you dreading?
Yeah, that's a good question. So stadium-wise, it's tough. Actually, my family, we do baseball vacations every summer where we would road trip to like 3 or 4. So I've actually been to like 22 out of the 30. But the couple that I haven't seen are some of the biggest. So, for instance, I have not been to Yankee Stadium, haven't been to Fenway, and I think those two are probably the two biggest I'm looking forward to. But also, the new Braves Stadium opening up this year. My company, I work for a construction company, actually built the stadium. So I'm really excited to see that, just from, you know, from a career and a biking standpoint. Stadiums I'm kind of dreading. It's not that the stadium I'm dreading, it's just the ride. The Phoenix to Denver leg is going to be pretty tough.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have ever been to Phoenix, but...
Oh, we have.
So I'll tell you a quick story about Phoenix. We went to see a Diamondbacks game in Phoenix, and it was 102 degrees. We walked in, and the bartender who served us said, "Oh, it's a good thing you came on a cool day," which is completely insane.
Yeah, it's the city's awesome, and it's a great time, but at the same time, it's... I mean, when I lived there in last June, it would get up to like 130. And everyone down there says, "Oh, it's a dry heat. It's not that bad." I mean, I don't care where you're from. 130 degrees is hot. Like, yeah. That's absurd. So, but yeah, but the climb, you know, it's really mountainy when you first, you know, get out of the Phoenix metropolitan area. And so the climbing is pretty tough. And there's not many, you know, little towns along the way. So that'll definitely be a tough leg, but all the more fun.
So as part of the ride, you set up a fundraising goal, and I'm wondering if there's a certain amount of success you're looking for. Are you looking for a number of mentors to sign up? And just for listeners to be aware of, what's the fundraising goal that you've set?
Yeah, so there's actually really two goals with the ride. The first is obviously, like I said, first and foremost, to encourage as many people to go out and become a mentor. You know, you really just don't know how big of an impact you can have on a kid's life. And the second goal is a fundraising goal that Biking for Baseball actually just started this year. Yeah, it's called the Biking for Baseball Little Scholarship. We're hoping to raise $160,000 to put two kids who have benefited from some sort of mentorship program, whether it be Big Brothers Big Sisters or Boys and Girls Club, put them through a 4-year undergraduate degree. So that's kind of the ultimate goal, you know, kind of our hashtag or motto this year is, you know, turn two, help us turn two. So that's those are the two big goals. Honestly, I really want to hit that 160, just because, you know, I think it'd be an absolutely incredible experience to, you know, fly a couple of awesome kids over to Chicago for the last game of the ride and to present them with this, you know, surprise them with this scholarship money that's going to completely change their lives. So that's, I mean, that would really make my trip, as if we can hit that goal. But obviously, you know, even putting one kid through would be incredible. So,
yeah, for sure. Nick, do you want to jump in?
Oh, yeah. Well, Tim, I just want to let you and listeners know, on behalf of Bunch of the Gap, we're going to be making a donation to Biking for Baseball right after this is done recording.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And you know what? I don't know if you guys kind of saw the donation page, but we're actually auctioning off my fandom this ride. So we're
like
keeping
track. Calf molds or something, or like a before and after?
Before
like...
and after molds, yeah.
Okay, that's also not a bad idea.
Just email us whenever you want ideas for stuff, man. We'll...
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys, we're clearly not thinking outside of the box enough over at B4B, because these are way better ideas. But what we're doing is we're keeping track of team-by-team donations, and the team at the end of the year will earn my fandom. And so I'm going to fly out and go to a game of whoever wins for the next season. And, I mean, obviously, I don't really care who wins as much, as long as I really don't want the Cubs to win. So if the Blue Jays win, I'll see you guys in Toronto, because I'd love to come back there.
That sounds great, man. Great.
Yeah, so for all those interested in making a donation, it's bikingforbaseball.org. We will also include the link in the companion piece and in the show notes for that. Please select Blue Jays when you make a donation, and we'll keep track for Tim and win his fandom. So, Tim, we're just about to wrap up here. We got a few more questions that we wanted to do before we let you go. You okay to stick around?
Of course.
Okay. Adam, you wanted some rapid-fire questions.
Rapid-fire. Question number one, Kanye or Chance?
Chance.
Okay, question number two, Lou Malnati's or Geno's East?
Geno's East.
Name your favorite non-punchable Blue Jay.
Still Batista.
All right, D, what are your plans for Toronto? When are you stopping in Toronto?
Let's see. I think I'm in Toronto in mid-August, I think. I think it's like August 20th, around then. Not too many plans. Really want to, I'll probably go do the tourist things, go back up in the Needle, and I really kind of want to see a game from the hotel room again. That was pretty sweet.
Awesome.
Okay, so then before we wrap, we're going to do our weekly trivia segment that Nick's going to ask you a trivia question. Tim, we'd love for you to participate in it. Just know that Adam and I are terrible at these, so don't feel any pressure because we never get it right anyways.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, this week's trivia question. The Chicago White Sox were one of eight teams of the American League's inaugural season in 1901. Of the eight, only the White Sox and which other team have never changed their name? And we'll let our guests answer first.
Ooh.
Can't really give you a multiple choice because that would give away the answers.
Yeah, no, I agree. Let me think. Let me think of who the inaugural eight first are.
Tim, I'm so glad you have to go first because I have no idea.
I'm struggling to think of like who the original American League teams are. I'm gonna guess New York Yankees.
Oh, okay,
that's not. I know for a fact.
Absolutely,
it's not.
That's what I was gonna guess though.
That was absolutely my guess. Dave, you go next.
Well, no, Tim took the Yankees, so I don't know if I have one. You know, if it's not the Yankees, it might be, you know what, let's just say the Athletics.
I'll go with the Boston Red Sox.
Unfortunately, you're all mistaken. The correct answer is the Detroit Lions.
What?
What?
Yeah, the Detroit Lions. I'm sorry, the Detroit Tigers. I already missed football season.
Nobody wins in trivia.
Nobody wins. We all look like idiots.
The original eight teams were the Chicago White Sox, the White Sox, the Detroit Tigers, the Boston Americans, the Cleveland Blues, the Philadelphia Athletics, the Washington Senators. Now get this, it gets weird. The Baltimore Orioles.
So that's later great. So we didn't even get the original eight.
And the Milwaukee Brewers, who would later become the Baltimore Orioles.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Nick.
Yeah, so.
Thanks for just before football split off from baseball.
We can start a new. Right. It can be Punt to the Gap.
Okay, so let's wrap up here with you, Tim. So, oh my God, I can't even speak anymore. It's bedtime. So, for those interested in making a donation, please visit bikingforbaseball.org. You can also follow Tim on Twitter. It's at Tim Lala. Bet you didn't think we'd pull that up for you. And yeah, make sure to check the Blue Jays when you make a donation. And Tim, look forward to seeing you in Toronto.
Yeah, and just really quick, actually the Twitter is actually at bikingforbaseball. You're not going to see anything on my Twitter because I don't post anything. So
there's okay. Not going to be any calf updates on there?
Yeah, it'll be on Biking for Baseball.
Okay, so make sure you follow at Biking for Baseball on Twitter as well. Tim, thank you so much for your time today.
Awesome, thank you guys.
Breaking news, guys, but breaking news.
This happened during our interview with Tim Lala.
We had
this
to wait.
This is massive.
We suppressed
it. There's never been a bigger moment for Bunt to the Gap.
3 hours ago, using the Bunt to the Gap Twitter, I tweeted, at Jose Canseco, what is the largest animal you could beat in a fight?
So, legitimate question. You know, you expect him to say Bigfoot or something like that.
I thought maybe a bear.
Yep. Or a lion or a horse or something like that. I feel like Jose Canseco would punch a horse. Jose Canseco has now responded to us. He said, at Bunt to the Gap, and simply replied, Mothra, which is a kaiju that first appeared in Toho's 1961 film Mothra. I believe it is also a character in the Godzilla franchise. Mothra gets beat up quite frequently by Godzilla. I believe Jose Canseco thinks he's Godzilla.
Jose Canseco, you're the best.
You're the best.
Thank you. You made my night.
Okay. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on TuneIn. Please follow us on Twitter at Bunt to the Gap, on Instagram at Bunt to the Gap, on Facebook, facebook.com/Bunt to the Gap. And if you like the show, please share it among friends and support the podcast by giving us a review on iTunes. It helps others find the show. We'll see you next week, baseball fans.